You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Well, as I look out my window, it's sunny and it's 18 degrees here in Fayetteville. It must be baseball season. Razorback baseball starts tomorrow at Baumwalker Stadium. A doubleheader against Washington State. First pitch is at noon. The second game will begin about 30 to 45 minutes after the first game ends. We're going to talk about it today. We got a lot to get to. Bubba Carpenter is in studio with me this morning. We'll talk to Jeff King a little bit later in our show. Jeff, great Razorback, longtime Major League Baseball player. He's going to be inducted into the College Baseball Hall of Fame tonight in Overland Park, Kansas. He'll join us from the site here just a little bit later in the show. And then we'll finish the show talking about Razorback basketball and the win that they had last night over LSU to keep their tournament hopes alive. Anthony Christensen will join me in studio to talk about basketball. Bubba's here. Fourth year that Bubba and I have been doing a podcast together during baseball season. In the past, we've done a baseball podcast, but that was before we had our daily podcast. So now we're going to kind of wrap that into that baseball discussion into what we're doing here on a daily basis. We think Bubba's going to be with us a couple of times each week to talk about the weekend and then talk about the upcoming weekend. Bubba, it's good to see you.
It's good to see you. Your voice is a little scratchy.
Well, yeah, you know, I've had the flu. I'm one of the 24 million, and my household is four of the 24 million. I was telling you this, it's one thing like when you're sick, and then it's one thing when you have a sick child. We had three sick kids this week.
Wow.
6 years old, 4 year old, and a 3 year old, plus me, just a big kid. And, you know, thank God for my wife for putting up with all of us. She took a couple of days off and helped out. But, yeah, it's been a pretty rough week.
It's good to have you back. I don't need the germ shield, do I?
I have been fever-free for 3 days. It's just I'm not cough-free yet. And so the voice is it's coming back. You know, they say you've got a or not you. You've got a face for TV. Like you know, they'll say you've got a face for radio or you got a voice. I feel like I've got a voice for like a telehealth visit right now. That's where I'm at.
Well, it's so, kind of sexy.
Yeah. Well, it is Valentine's Day, or almost.
We'll delete that out.
No. Let's leave it. We'll show it to my wife. Let's talk about this game or this series this week, Washington State. We don't know much about them. And sometimes when you don't know a lot about a team, it's hard to set expectations to a certain extent. I expect Arkansas is going to play well and win most of these games, if not sweep Washington State this weekend. They've only got two pitchers who have pitched in a Division I game. But that unknown is something that's just kind of interesting this week.
Yeah, you never – like, I tried to find out information about them. It's hard to find out much about them, but – you know, they got some JUCO guys that have been through. They've got good JUCO numbers. You never know when a guy steps out on the mound here at Baumwalker. You talk about, you know, guys that haven't faced D1 hitters yet. Some guys have the ability to slow their heart rate down, and it doesn't matter if they're pitching JUCO, scrimmage. It's all the same to them. They step on the mound, they're just trying to get out. So it sounds like from listening to the coach talk, Nathan Choate, it mm-hmm. sounds like to me that they got a fundamental team that throws strikes and make plays on defense. And if you do that, anything can happen.
I feel like for Arkansas, the focus this week is on us, on doing what we do well. And if you do that, then things are going to fall into place. And I think, you know, for me, it really starts with pitching. Are you able to throw strikes? And that was one of the things, and you've been out there at a lot of the practices too, in these preseason scrimmages, their ability to throw strikes in the cold, early, you know, in the process, that really stood out to me because you just don't always see that.
Well, you notice on the days it was a little bit colder, guys had a hard time finding the zone, and it's going to be cold this weekend. Friday's not going to be too bad. Don't know about Saturday, and, you know, we'll see what happens with it being wet and cold on Saturday if we get that game in. But it's not going to be too bad. But, boy, there were some days that were cold. You can see the guys, if you're a pitcher on the mound, the ball just feels different. Mm-hmm. You know, your body's not really cold, but the ball just feels different in your hand. It's hard to get a feel for it. Pitching's about having a feel and getting that release point. And so, you know, you can really tell a difference. But I think you're right. I think that's the key is our guys just coming out there and executing pitches. And I know on the hitting side of it, our guys are dying to face somebody else. I mean, they're foaming at the mouth. They can't wait to get out there and face some different pitching.
So Arkansas, their rotation for the weekend, Gabe Gackle in game one. That'll be the game at noon tomorrow. Zach Root will throw tomorrow afternoon in game two. Game three, which will be on Saturday, or it's scheduled for Saturday. We'll see if they can get it played. There's a pretty high chance of rain that day. Will be Gage Wood, the right-hander. And then on Monday, Landon Beidelschies, the left-hander from Ohio State, scheduled to throw for the Razorbacks. As we mentioned, for Washington State, their rotation is full of players who have never pitched for them, really, in a game. In fact, all three of these guys have never pitched for Washington State in a game. None of them pitched in a D1 game. You've got a couple of junior college All-Americans. That's Nick Lewis and Luke Myers. And then you've got Griffin Smith, who's a redshirt freshman for them. I think I have that right. But they, from a pitching standpoint, advantage Arkansas.
Definitely. Well, most teams we play, it's going to be advantage Arkansas. Yeah. Our staff is ridiculous, you know. Every time I start going down the list and looking at these guys, and then you and I sit up there and we watched a lot of pitches be thrown this early spring, and man, this stuff is ridiculous. When you're looking at TrackMan and you're watching some of the stuff coming in there, you're like, man, it's definitely a deep staff. You know, we talk about the past. Last year we thought we had a really good staff, had a couple injuries, but this year there's just something different about the pitching staff. So it's going to be, I think, definitely advantage Arkansas.
Let's start with Gackle. What have you seen from him?
Electric stuff, just plus pitches across the board. I mean, fastball, slider, curveball, cutter, slider thing. Fastball's elite. The thing I like about him, he's got a really good changeup, like a plus changeup. I view everything from the left side of the plate as a left-handed hitter, and the changeup, that's a great weapon against lefties. Then he can come back. You know, and the thing is, he's throwing that thing 88, 89, 90 mile an hour changeup. Must be nice, you know. But, you know, and then fastball's in the upper 90s. I mean, when it warms up, he'll be sitting upper 90s, and it's just ridiculous stuff. But his mound presence, you know, we saw him come into some tough situations last year, and nothing fazes him.
There's always a question about when a pitcher comes from the bullpen to a starter role, how they can hold their stuff, you know, for later in the game. It seems like that's not an issue for him.
No, it's not. And I tell you, the thing, you and I talked about it last year, he was destined to be a starter because from the bullpen, coming in a closing role, he wasn't able to use all his pitches. Now he's got a chance to really use all the stuff he's got, his full arsenal, which is ridiculous.
Dave Van Horn said that if they would have made it through the regional last year, they were going to start him behind Hagen in the Super Regional.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah, it would have been. And they had to – and this is why that first game of the Regional was so disappointing for them last year. They had to burn so much pitching just to be able to stay in the winner's bracket, you know, that it affected how Gackle – I don't know that he was bad whenever he came back out and pitched, but it certainly affected the freshness of him.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I carry the box scores from –
Haunted. You showed me your box scores. You got like Oregon State, the championship game, and North Carolina State, the Super Regional.
Yeah, I've got the game against Ole Miss.
Where
DeLucia shut us down, yeah. And who was Sweeney behind the plate, calling balls off the plate. Got last year's box score, TCU the year before. I mean, yeah, I keep them all. It's just a reminder of, just a reminder. So,
you like to punish yourself, I think. Let's say you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Razorback sports analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. These two left-handers, Root and Beidelschies, I've been really impressed when I watched them pitch. Yeah. Root is more of he's going to work with base runners. I mean, he's not going to have a whole lot of 1-2-3 innings, I don't think. But to his credit, he knows how to work around base runners. Beidelschies, it's more of he almost looks like he's got back-end stuff. And, you know, they've got four games this weekend, so I wasn't surprised at all to see the four pitchers who are going to pitch in a starting role this weekend. It would not surprise me, though, Bubba, when they get to Texas next week, to see Beidelschies in one of those back-end roles. Because when you send him out there and you say, hey, let it loose for one inning, it can be pretty spectacular stuff.
I think so. I think whoever doesn't get that third spot, that's third starting spot, whether it's Gage or Landon, I think that guy is going to go somewhere towards the back of the bullpen. Yeah. Or they can be a guy that in multiple roles. I mean, you know, Landon, he could be a long guy. You know, if someone falters early, they could bring him in and basically be a second starter, you know, coming in. So, I mean, there's a lot of roles he could do. But, you know, honestly, Root is better than I thought he was going to be when coming in. He's got good stuff. And I think it's just his ability to pitch. He knows how to pitch, like you said. He knows how to get out of jams. And I heard Matt Hobbs talking about, you know, the game against Oklahoma State where he came in, hadn't showed a slide step all year, did a slide step changeup with me as a hitter, a slide step changeup. I was jumping out of the box, but ended up getting a ground ball double play to get out of an inning. So guys that can do that, just the whole pitchability thing. I think we get caught up in all the analytics, the spin rate and all that, but just a guy that's got that pitchability and knows how to pitch out of jams is huge.
So explain a slide step for people who don't understand that.
Well, a slide step, so in your normal delivery, like Root's got a big, like old-fashioned style leg kick where he brings his leg up high, he twists his body around, he separates his hands early. A slide step, you just come set, and you just go straight to the plate. You're just stepping straight towards home plate. And, you know, you'll do it sometimes when you think a guy's going to steal. But he did it in that situation to get the hitter out front. And a slide step changeup, I'll tell you a guy who stole it all the time, is Andy Pettit. His slide step changeup was nasty. So when you move quick like that, the hitter kind of mirrors you. He moves quick, and then next thing you know, you get him out front and roll over, double play.
Gage Wood. He looks better to me. I thought through the first 2 weeks he was one of the more impressive starters. And then last week he had to face the old lineup, the veteran lineup, the guys who are going to start in the field and, you know, obviously in the lineup tomorrow. And they knocked him around pretty good. The stuff wasn't bad. It's just whenever he left a pitch over the plate, it got hammered. And it happened over and over and over again for about three innings.
Okay, well, so I go down to the dugout and I'm watching from field level, and you know when you're watching TrackMan, you see the numbers, you know what he's throwing, but down on field level, I looked at Matt Hobbs and I'm like, man, his stuff, everything looks better this year. Like everything's fastball's got more zip on it, more ride, breaking ball sharper. The cutter he's throwing right now, 90 miles an hour, it's dirty. And then all of a sudden he gets hit and gives up 8 runs, but these guys have seen him. You know how many times these hitters have seen Gage?
Oh, I know.
So the advantage is definitely to the hitter. I think if he's facing another team, that doesn't happen. And I felt bad for him. You know, I saw him go up the tunnel, and I just gave him knuckles and said, man, your stuff is great. Because to me, I mean, he looks really good this year. He's thicker. He's stronger. Just every pitch just has a little bit more bite on it.
And he also pitched in a little bit of a colder situation, too.
Right.
It was weird last Saturday. The first – they played a doubleheader scrimmage, which I guess really helps them a little bit going into what they're going to see at least tomorrow. You know, the fact that they were out there for an extended period of time. But the first scrimmage, it's like 65, 68 degrees. I was reading the National Weather Service in Fort Smith that day. They set a record high for that date. It was fairly warm. And then – somewhere toward the end of that first scrimmage, this cold front starts pushing through. And, I mean, it's legitimately 20 degrees colder. And then you got that north wind coming in to the stadium, and it's just a completely different atmosphere, I guess, that they were pitching in that second scrimmage than they were in that first. And you know, I guess unfortunately for him, he had to face a lineup, number one, that was upset because they had not hit well earlier, and then he had to do it in the cold.
Well, and going back to, like, you look at Kendall Diggs, he had a home run off of him on a splitty. That pitch is about 2 inches away from being a ground ball. I mean, it was a pretty good pitch down, just caught a little too much of the plate. If it's a couple inches outside, Kendall hits it off the end of the bat, probably rolls over to first or second base. But credit Kendall, he did a great job of staying on the ball and getting just enough of it to get it out to right field. But you know, that's baseball. But these guys have seen him so much. And I know we talk about the hitters excited to face another staff. Mm-hmm. These pitchers, I know they're excited to face someone else other than their hitters.
So let's go around the diamond right now, just the different positions, and talk about, you know, who is the guy or who are the guys that are competing for these spots. We'll start at catcher, and the guy, without any doubt, is Ryder Helfrich.
Hey, Ryder's a stud.
I think he could be the best all-around catcher at Arkansas since James McCann.
I think so.
Because, yeah, you know, there have been a lot of good defensive catchers here. There haven't been a whole lot of that guys who can catch but can also hit. And he's got the power in his bat.
And I like the adjustments he made in his swing. I think he had too much going on last year, big leg kick, a lot of hand movement. It's hard to time all that up. He simplified his swing this year. I like it. I like it a lot. I've always loved the way he receives, the way, you know, there's a metric for how many strikes you get that are out of the zone, and he's probably the best in the country in stealing strikes. But he's just and he's tough. I like the fact that he's tough. You know, he reminds me of a guy back in the day, Kurt Pisker.
Mm-hmm.
Played with him. He was a catcher, just a real tough guy. You'd walk by him and you'd go when you walked by him because he just had that toughness, and that's the way I see Ryder.
First base, it looks, you know, that was the position going into the preseason that was the most up for grabs. It looks like Rocco Pepi is going to be their first baseman, at least on opening day. He doesn't have the prototypical size of a first baseman, but we've seen that work here with, you know, players like Trevor Ezell.
Well,
he's got a heck of a bat, though.
I tell you what, with a name like Rocco Pepi, he sounds like a first baseman, doesn't he? Sounds like he'd be like the dirtiest guy on the field, just a scrappy.
I like to point out that he played for the Dirtbags at Long Beach State previously.
There you go. That's perfect. But, yeah, you know, he looks good. He looks comfortable. I know there were a couple plays, balls from the left side of the infield that were up the line, came off, made a tag. He looks like he's moving natural over there for a guy. And I think what you're going to get out of him is a lot more offensive. You know, now I know Dave's big on the defensive side of it. I'm a money ball guy. I just want to drive in more than I give up. But that first base position is really important because you're not going to get perfect throws. I think as a first baseman, you have to anticipate a bad throw. But, boy, I love the way the guy swings the bat. I love it.
Yeah, if you leave one over the I think one of the big takeaways for me from the preseason is if you leave one over the middle against Pepi, it's going to get hammered.
Yeah, you know, I remember a bat against, and I was actually talking to Steele Eaves in the dugout about it. I don't know if you remember, Pepi hit a slider. To over left field fence in a hog pen. And it was a good pitch. It's bottom of the zone. He got out front a little bit, stayed on the tracks and hit it out. And, I mean, it was a good pitch. And most guys, you know, dribble that to third base. But, boy, he stayed on it and drove it over the fence. So that's good to see. And I was giving Steele a hard time about it. But it really was a good pitch.
Second base is going to be Nolan Souza. Cam Kozel's giving him a run for his money, but Nolan's going to be the starter. You said before he ever played a game here, you thought he looked like a major leaguer.
Yeah. First time I saw him, I thought this guy's going to be a first-round pick in a couple years. I mean, the athleticism. And I think he's gotten so much better at second base this year. He looks more natural. Last year he looked like an athlete, you know, trying to play second base. Now he looks like a second baseman that is an athlete. He can play anywhere on the field. He's got, you know, the pop he's got. It's unbelievable. He's got a good arm too. But things that stand out with me, you know, I saw McIntyre throw him a nasty changeup away in the scrimmage, and he took the changeup away, pitcher's pitch, and he got a fastball in, pulled his hands inside. A lot of guys don't get to that pitch, hit it 114. Line drive to right field. I think I texted you to see what the exit velo was. I've gone to the other room. But
it was the hardest hit ball I saw the entire preseason.
Yeah, and you know, he had just, I don't know, it's just something about it. His presence at the plate is just, he's another guy that's made a really big jump this year. But defensively, I like where he's at.
Right now, my big prediction, we'll visit this again in June, Nolan Souza will lead Arkansas in stolen bases this year.
That's a good. I think you're right.
Based on how aggressive we saw him in the preseason, I would be surprised if that's not the case. He's got to get on base, but I think he will. He looks really comfortable against right-handers. Left-handers kind of carved him up a little bit. We'll see how he can adjust to that. But I think as long as he gets on base, he's going to be real active once he gets on there.
I think so, and I think last year he was a little tense, trying to do a little bit too much. I think you're going to see a different guy at the plate this year. And the key is just don't avoid that big slump. You know, like he was, you know, there was one game he hit two home runs, and then the next game, you know, he'll strike out a couple times. Like he was just kind of up and down. I think you're going to see a more steady Souza this year.
Brent Iredale is going to be the third baseman. I think there's a lot of pop in his bat. But what I've been really impressed with, Bubba, with him is that the draft guides, if you will, last year, they weren't real high on his defense, but I see a guy that plays a fairly good, you know, defensive third base. He's made some errors, but it feels like every day when he made an error, he made up for it with a really spectacular play later on.
Yeah, okay, so he doesn't look real smooth and fluid over there.
The coaches call him stiff at third base.
Oh, okay. Well,
that's what Bobby Werner told me. You'll own it, Bobby.
But he makes the play. Yeah, you know, you don't have to be pretty. The bottom line is get the out.
And that was Bobby's point, was like you watch him and his mechanics, and it doesn't look like it's a third baseman. But then all of a sudden, the results for the most part have been what you want.
I guess I still get stuck grading guys, you know, off of like Caden Wallace, and that's not fair.
Yeah,
you know,
good.
I judge second basemen off of Robert Moore, the way he moved around. You know, but when you see Iredale catch a ball, he catches it and he kind of comes up tall and throws like that. It's not, you know, it's not real fluid, but man, he gets it done, and I'm going to love seeing him in the middle of that lineup.
So Vahiva Aloy's got a new batting stance this year. The expectation is, at least if it's anything like what we've seen in the preseason and certainly what we saw at the Cape Cod League, is that it's going to be a better year for him offensively than last year. I mean, he had good numbers last year, led the team, I think, in home runs, was up there in RBI, if not the team leader in RBI, but there was a lot of swing and miss in his game too. There's a lot less timing. Is that the word? Maybe there's a lot less pieces that he has to time up in this swing?
Well, I remember the first time I saw him hit last year, I asked Bobby Wernis about it. I said, do you think he's going to struggle? Because it took a lot to get from his stance to his launch position. And, you know, it ended up being a situation, and I think that movement caused him to have to pull off a little bit. That front side would pull off, but I like where he's at right now. And we talked about it in at bat over the weekend where he faced McIntyre, and he struck out. But you could see first pitch, it looked like, you know, you could tell he was sitting on a cutter and he got a fastball, you know, and then he kind of went, you could tell he was frustrated. And so then he went back to the fastball and got a cutter. and then McIntyre ended up striking him out with a fastball in, a really good pitch. But the whole point of that is you could see him evolve. Like last year, I felt like I never could figure out his approach at the plate. He didn't make adjustments. I could see him making adjustments in these at bats in the fall and then in the spring early on, where you can tell he's sitting on pitches in certain situations. He's going to be probably two hole hitter for us. So there's going to be times he's going to have to sit off speed. And I really liked the fact it looked like he was making an adjustment.
I got to be fair to the Bobby Wernis. Here's what he told me. He said on Iredale, he said he moves well. It's just aesthetically stiff. Aesthetically stiff. That's what he said about Iredale.
Bobby should be a politician.
let's look at right field. I think Kendall Diggs is going to start in right field. There's something going on with Logan Maxwell and his hamstring. I think that might keep him out of the field this first weekend, especially with the type of weather that they're expecting. You don't want to risk that with him. What have you seen from Kendall?
Well, you can see his bat speed getting better. Every time you watch him, he's getting better. You know, he's putting together good at bats. Like I said, he got the splitty off of Gage down, split finger change, and stayed on it, drove it over the fence to right field. Still late on a few fastballs that I think as we get into the season, you won't see him late. I thought it was a good sign that he swung at a couple of first pitch fastballs. Where like last year, he was a little bit tentative at the plate. And I think it all goes back to when you have an injury, you don't have that same when you step in the box. And I think he was a little more tentative. But the fact that he's swinging at first pitch fastball, he's just a little late. I think once that comes around, but he's a guy you got to have Kendall in the lineup.
Yeah.
There's something about his presence in the lineup. I don't care where it's at.
Well, he's just a leader of the team,
too. Yeah. Yeah. You got to have him. You got to have him in there. I love Kendall Diggs, and he'll be in there somewhere.
And you could attribute this to them being older, too, but it is not lost on me that in the last 5 years or so, Goodhart had his shoulder fixed, and he came back and had better power numbers, better year at the plate. Same thing happened with Jalen Battles. Same thing happened with Peyton Stovall last year. And so we'll see if that happens with Kendall again.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you take that back when you hurt your shoulder on the backside like Kendall did. I mean, you don't have the backside drive through the ball, and it makes you – when your back comes through, it doesn't come through with that same snap and that same whip. And you could see it with Kendall last year. And then it turns into a mental thing, and then from there it just goes downhill. I mean, hitting's so mental. So when something's not right with your body, it's hard to get your mind right.
Center field's going to be Charles Davelin, transfer from Florida Gulf Coast. Leadoff guy. I have a hard time, like, finding a comp for this guy. Certainly I've never seen a swing and a leg kick like he's got out front with his right foot. But he's quick. He covers a lot of ground in center. And he does a pretty good job of getting on base.
Yeah, love him. I love him. And I'm trying to think back. When's the last pure leadoff hitter we had?
Pure leadoff hitter?
Yeah.
Maybe Ezel?
But he wasn't prototypical. He wasn't like a – like you would picture a leadoff guy. Like he did a great job because he saw a lot of pitches, put the ball in play, but he wasn't a speed guy. Mm. Played first base, you know. Didn't have the leadoff body.
So your point being that there hasn't been a lot of players like him recently.
Yeah, I just don't remember the last time we had a what I consider a prototypical SEC leadoff hitter. But I think he's going to do a great job. He has a little bit of toughness about him, and you know I've said that multiple times already about guys. You can tell toughness the way they play the game. And you know, that's an attribute to DVH. We always talk about the team taking on his personality. Mm-hmm. I think they brought in guys with his personality, and you can already see it coming together early on, the season having started yet.
Left field, it looks like Justin Thomas is going to be the starting left fielder on day one if Maxwell can't play. Thomas started at Georgia. He began his career at Georgia. I don't think he ever started a game there, but he began at Georgia. Went to a community college down in Florida where Colin Smith coaches. Last year, speedy guy, kind of a streaky hitter.
Another guy that I like a lot, athletic, can fly. Another guy that could really, you know, he's been hitting in the nine hole. He could lead off. And if you look up and down his lineup, I mean, look at all the guys that could potentially lead off. Mm-hmm. And that says a lot about the athleticism and the speed of this team. I mean, you got Davelin could lead off. Maxwell could lead off. Mm-hmm. Justin Thomas could lead off. Souza could lead off. I mean, you know, for that matter, Kendall could even lead off. Sees a ton of pitches. I mean, there's a lot of guys in this lineup that could jump into that leadoff spot if needed.
And then at DH, it looks like, if I was guessing this weekend, you're probably going to see Logan Maxwell from the left side, and I think you'll probably see Michael Anderson some from the right side.
I think so, and I love Logan Maxwell. I love his approach at the plate. You know, some guys just look like a hitter. He looks like a hitter to me. I think he's going to be fun to watch this year once he's 100%. I hope he gets to play this weekend. I know the weather's not going to be great, but I love his approach at the plate. Mm-hmm. Always looks, you know, and I go off of, and some people give me a crazy look when I say this. I like how he takes pitches. Mm. Good hitters take pitches better than bad hitters, and I love the way he takes pitches. He takes pitches like he knows what's coming. Mm-hmm. And Michael Anderson.
Yeah, Michael Anderson.
Yeah, big dude, a lot of power. Actually hit a bomb to left field that my kid tripped and fell on. I didn't realize it until I saw it on Twitter.
Living infamy.
But a definite threat at the plate, and so I think he's going to be a good – and Cahill Loy, another one that against lefties. He breaks lefties. You look at the offensive metrics. I mean, when he hits the ball, he hits it hard.
There was a note in his bio at BYU that said he could hit a golf ball 400 yards.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Especially in that altitude in Utah.
Yeah,
it wouldn't surprise me. All right, so we got Jeff King coming up. Real quick, Jeff King is one of your Razorback heroes.
Yes, he is. Saw him play a couple times, and it was one of those things, you know, when I watched him play, I knew I wanted to play here. I mean, I grew up a Razorback fan, but watching him play just solidified it. And I knew I wanted to be a Razorback, and got a chance. We crossed paths in Major League camp a couple times, and so it was really, really cool. And so, I'm excited he's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, the College Baseball Hall of Fame.
We'll have a conversation with Jeff King coming up, but first a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. Tonight in Overland Park, Kansas, Jeff King will become the first former Razorback inducted into the College Baseball Hall of Fame. This is kind of a cool deal. The Baseball Hall of Fame has been around for about 20 years, but there's never been a physical home for it. And beginning later this year, they're going to have their own museum there in Overland Park in the Kansas City area. And Jeff, part of an 11-member class that's going into the Hall of Fame tonight, he joins us now. Jeff, first off, congratulations, and we appreciate you being with us.
Hey, thanks so much, and I'm glad to join you.
You know, you had such a long major league career. I wonder, the college years, how special were they for you, and how did they contribute to what you were able to do at the professional level?
That's a great question. First of all, I think, you know, we're talking 40 years, right?
Yeah.
So that was a long time ago, and just everything going on right now just solidifies my thoughts on it, you know, and just my fondness looking back at those times. And it was just unbelievable. And definitely there was a divine appointment for me to end up at the University of Arkansas. No question.
So it's a good story, and you grew up in Colorado. Tell people about how you ended up playing here for Norm DeBrine.
Yeah, that's just crazy. So I was drafted in a later round, like 21 or 23, from the Cubs out of high school. So somebody had seen me, but typically, you know, Colorado, you know, that did not get a lot of traction, you know, as far as baseball was concerned. And so anyway, kind of my thinking was, you know, well, I'll show you. I think I'm better than a 21st round draft pick, and you know, really had no business thinking that, or no reference like to think that way. Although that's kind of how I felt. I didn't have any idea how I was going to make that happen, and really out of the blue, I wasn't like I said. Besides some in-state schools, I was not recruited nationally.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the blue, I think Coach Clark had some ties to Colorado Springs, must have heard about me somewhere, set up a workout for him in Colorado Springs, which, to be honest with you, I don't even remember, but he liked what he saw and flew me out to check out the campus and really liked it. When I got home from that trip, I think they offered me a half a scholarship, and I think my dad had some sort of ties with Baylor University, and I think I could have gone to Baylor maybe on a full ride. And so I told Coach Clark, thanks, but I guess I'll go to Baylor on a full ride. And whether that was true or not, I don't know, and I didn't mean that to in a snobby sort of way. It's just, you know, I didn't have any money, and my mom and dad didn't have any money. And anyway, shortly thereafter, they offered me a full ride, and that sealed the deal.
You know, the I mean, you're going in with Roger Clemens tonight, just to give people kind of an idea of the backlog of great players that have not made the College Baseball Hall of Fame. When you got that call, was there any surprise?
Yeah, it was a big surprise. I'm not sure I knew that even existed. So that was a real big surprise. I gotta tip my hat to Kevin Trainer from the University of Arkansas. He's really been a big advocate for me. I'm sorry, I got interrupted by some call. Can you guys still see
yeah,
me?
Yeah, we're still here.
Okay. So hats off to, you know, thanks to Kevin Trainer for, I'm sure, lobbying for me. And it's quite the honor. And I'm speechless.
Bubba?
Jeff, how you doing? Appreciate you coming on with us.
Oh, you bet.
I got to ask you this question, though. I tell people all the time, like, everyone knows Norm DeBrine, and now he's the nicest guy in the world. But I tell people, back then, he wasn't the same nice guy that you see today. I was scared of two people in my life. One was my dad, and the other was Norm DeBrine. I was scared to death of him. Some days he would show up at the ballpark, and we're like, oh, it's going to be a long day. And you didn't know when it was going to be. It might be a messed up first and third coverage or a bunt coverage or someone just dropping a ball in the outfield, but he was going to snap at some point. Do you remember that about Norm DeBrine?
You know, I remember that a little bit. You know, he could lose it on the guys from time to time. But what I really remember from Norm was just a great man, a man of integrity, and, you know, a baseball guy. And, you know, obviously, Norm and Coach Clark, I owe a lot of the success of my career that I went on to have. So nothing but fond memories of Coach DeBrine. And apparently he'll be here tonight, so I'm really looking forward to seeing him.
That's awesome. Yeah, we all love Norm DeBrine. And I know if you talk to any former player of his, they'd do anything in the world for him, and he would still do anything for us. But let me ask you one technical question. I do a lot of teaching. I teach a lot of hitting. You know, and I try to – everyone, you know, mechanics are important, but approach is so important. Give me your approach at the plate. Like, what – did you hunt fastball? Did you hunt in a zone? Like, what was your approach when you stepped up to the plate?
I think that evolved a little bit. I think early in my career, my swing might have been just a hair too long. And so I tried to shorten up my swing a bit. And but I think during the better years that I have, I just, you know, wanted to be aggressive more toward the middle of the field, or even thinking a little bit right center, even though I ended up pulling the ball all the time. That helped me keep the ball fair, if that makes a little sense, whereas being just a straight dead red pull hitter, you know, I, you know, hit those hooking, we called them Egyptian home runs, right? They were a home run in Egypt, but foul, and they were foul balls. And so just trying to think more middle of the field helped me keep those balls straight without the hook in them.
Oh, I love it. Well, who was the toughest pitcher you ever faced?
You know, that's tough. I mean, a lot of them were tough. But, you know, I remember facing Mariano Rivera a couple times. And I think, you know, he had some just nasty stuff. And I think one of his keys besides that nasty cutter was, you know, there's certain pitchers that, you know, there's the ball kind of comes out of nowhere. Just such a smooth Cadillac delivery, and all of a sudden, boom, the ball's, you know, by you. So he was a tough one.
Well, I tell you what, I know you don't remember this, but it was my very first big league camp with the Yankee organization. I want to say it was 95. And you were playing first base in a spring training game. I got a base hit and went to first base. And then you were awesome. You patted me on the back and said, you know, congratulations. And so I really appreciate that, because I was a fan of yours growing up. So finally getting to meet you there at first base was awesome.
I wish I could tell you I remember that, but I don't.
So Jeff, let's your college career, 84 to 86. So you went to a World Series in those years. You know, there was a game that was actually kind of maybe at the time, I don't know, you tell me how big of a deal it was, but you got lights at George Cole Field, and Texas came in. I think they were number one or number two, and Ralph Krauss hits a walk-off home run to beat them there the first night with lights. But just what are the memories that you have from your Arkansas days?
You know, it's just a blur. I think, you know, just over the last week or two leading up to this event, you know, it maybe dawned on me for the first time how, you know, special that time was for me. And maybe I didn't appreciate it as much or, you know, realize the success I did have there. You know, I was never a guy to, you know, pat myself on the back, but, you know, it's obviously a huge honor to be inducted into the College Baseball Hall of Fame. So I've had some more time to reflect now than probably I ever have. And it was crazy. It was crazy because, like I said earlier, you know, it's just, I couldn't have picked Fayetteville, Arkansas on a map if you gave me one. And, you know, to end up there, didn't even know what a Razorback was. And just, it was God's leading for sure. And having those coaches I had and that gave me a chance to play as a freshman, all those things and the success I had, it's just like a storybook.
One of the coaches was Dave Van Horn. He came here as a graduate assistant. Your sophomore year, would have been here with you for a couple of years. Any stories about a young Dave Van Horn as coach?
You know, not really. I think I would say off the top of my head, he was, you know, very, very intense guy, but that's what I remember. But whether that's true or not, I don't know, but all business.
Yeah. That much hasn't changed with him. I can tell you that for sure. You live in Montana now. Is that correct?
That's right.
Just kind of tell people about what your life's been like since your playing days ended.
Well, when I retired, I had bought a ranch in Montana and kind of just really stepped right into that, really enjoyed that. I did that for, I don't know, 8 or so years, learned that business. And recently I'm finding myself a little bit more retired, although I don't really like that. But you know, the time goes by, you know, and my time at Arkansas, that 40 years, that's a long time ago. And kind of crazy, but I've got 8 grandkids now, so that's been fun, and just trying to keep busy wherever I can. I've done a few small building projects, and I've enjoyed that. But
I know that they at Arkansas, they're hopeful to get you back one day, sometime soon, to recognize you on the field for this Hall of Fame induction. Any word on when that'll happen?
Well, you know, I have not been back, and I don't know how that's happened. You know, just life, you know, life, I guess, you know, you get busy, but I want to get back, might make it happen this spring. I think one of my teammates is having a 40-year kind of reunion out there, I think, in May, and we're going to see if we can pull that off.
Well, we hope we can. We hope we can see here. Jeff, we appreciate you joining us. Congratulations on all your success, and enjoy tonight going into the Hall of Fame.
Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you. Jeff King, inducted into the College Baseball Hall of Fame tonight in Overland Park, Kansas. Bubba, it's good you being here.
Yeah, enjoyed it. Enjoyed it. I love getting a chance to talk to Jeff and just listen to him because, I mean, just watched him. I thought he was the greatest player in the world first time I saw him play. So
there are those players. Scott Tabor was one of those players, and you know, in 79, there are those players that really have been big building blocks on Arkansas baseball, and he's right there among the top of the top.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, we appreciate you being here, Bubba. We'll see you at the ballpark tomorrow, and you'll be back here in studio next week.
Looking forward to it. Go Hogs.
All right. When we come back, Anthony Christensen is going to join me here on set. We'll talk about that Arkansas basketball win over LSU last night. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you are looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Arkansas basketball 15-9. Overall now 4-7 in the SEC after they beat LSU 70-58 last night at Bud Walton Arena. The Razorbacks have won 4 of 6. They've won 3 of 4. And they're back in the conversation now for the NCAA tournament. Quick programming note, we are going to have Joe Lenardi of ESPN on our podcast tomorrow to get the latest on where he thinks Arkansas stands in the NCAA tournament talk. We've got Anthony Christensen in here right now. Anthony, you were at the game last night. I was not. Didn't feel good. I heard John Calipari didn't feel too good afterward. I could sympathize a little bit with him not wanting to do a post-game press conference. What did we learn last night from this game?
In terms of learning anything, I don't know that there's any new information out there. It was kind of like the Georgia game or the Oklahoma game. It wasn't the most entertaining basketball I've ever seen, but they won, which is obviously important for the NCAA tournament postseason picture. Not that beating LSU is really going to increase your footing or give you a better chance or anything, but losing that game would have been bad. Obviously winning is important, getting that win, avoiding a bad loss, especially at home to LSU. Having lost to LSU already on this season, it's not a great mark on the resume, but avoiding the sweep and winning that game was big. In terms of, lessons or, continued studies, I would say, is Zvonimir Visic had another big game. And I think the big thing that you kind of notice when you look at him is that, last season and kind of early on in this season, he was kind of more of a pick-and-pop threat, mm-hmm. more of a three-point guy. And not to say that he's not, because he obviously is. He's one of the best three-point shooters in the country just when you look at the numbers. But he's been more of a roller and a pick-and-roll option at times. He's a high-level rim protector as well, but he's getting a lot done inside as well. Let me pull up his CBB analytics. He's shooting 75% at the rim, 56% in the paint. So there's a lot to like just in his game overall. And I think you saw it last night. He should have had a couple of assists too. It didn't end up with any assists, but he had some really nice passes that frankly should have ended in some baskets. But I don't think anybody's going to complain about that given Arkansas came out with the win. But that's my biggest takeaway. I also thought Billy Richmond had a nice night. Not necessarily something that you're going to look at the box score and say, oh, Billy Richmond went crazy. But I thought he had a nice night, gave him some productive minutes as well, had a couple of assists, 4 assists, 2 of 4 from the field. So, not necessarily the greatest shooting night ever, but 50% from the field, not going to complain with that. But those are my big takeaways.
Visic, 25 points, 10 of 13 from the floor, 3 of 5 from 3, 4 blocks, 3 rebounds in 28 minutes for him. Last night, it was interesting. So I was watching the TV broadcast, and they said that Calipari had asked the team during the shoot-around, hey, who wants to see Jonas Adu play more? And everybody raised their hands. Who wants to see Trevin Brazil play more minutes? Everybody raised their hands. And then he went and he challenged those two. And I thought the hustle from them was there last night. But mm-hmm. still, they've got to get more from those two. And I don't know if I'm talking about scoring necessarily. They did get 5 rebounds from Adu last night, which is more than he's given them here previously. They've got to get those two back in a rhythm, though, because Visic, he can't be the only inside presence that this team has.
Yeah, absolutely, and you especially need those two when you look at who they've got on the schedule coming up. Obviously, Texas A&M and Auburn, 2 top 10 teams in the latest AP poll, probably will remain there in the next one, and unless A&M drops a bad game on Saturday or whenever they play next. And I don't know who they play next, but A&M, one of the most physical teams in the country.
A&M plays Arkansas next. You're heading down there.
Yes, yes. I was talking about A&M, who A&M has next for the weekend game. Oh, my God.
That's Arkansas.
A&M. Oh, wow.
You're headed there tomorrow,
yes,
right?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, okay.
Yeah, we're not editing that out either.
That's fine.
You're going to have to live with that.
Look, I want everybody to know I'm tired. All the days run in my head.
The 8 o'clock tips are taking their toll on Anthony. So,
they're ridiculous amount of 8 o'clock tips.
Well, just wait till you get your 9 o'clock in Nashville.
Vanderbilt,
that's
going to be crazy, but I apologize.
So
yeah,
Arkansas
is going to have two top 10 teams in a row. So that's a brain fart. I apologize. but A&M, regardless, one of the most physical teams in the country, one of the best rebounding teams in the country. So you're going to need guys like Jonas Adu and Trevor Brazil to step up and kind of take it to him. You're going to have that. And not to say Zvonimir Visic doesn't need to do that too. He's going to have to play a part in that. But I thought at times you definitely saw that. There was a time, I don't remember exactly when it was. It was sometime in the first half, but Jonas Adu kind of stepped up and helped win a double team on, I think it was Victorious Miller, and forced a turnover, and Arkansas, I think, scored off that turnover as well. So, and maybe I'm forgetting exactly what happened, but I remember he helped on a double team. As we've now seen on this show, I can my memory is not exactly the best at the moment, but yeah, you're going to need to see those guys step up more, kind of, I guess, be more productive, be more available, I guess, yeah, is the best word to use. But I think, especially Jonas Adu, I thought he was productive in his minutes. Didn't necessarily, you know, he didn't shoot the balls much, but he did score. But I thought defensively he was really good.
You know, and I understand they've got different injuries, or they had different injuries, but if Nellie Davis can have the type of in-season turnaround that he did, I've still got, I guess, a sliver of hope that Jonas Adu can have a turnaround, and maybe by the time they're playing in March, whether it be at the SEC tournament or whatever, that he can look more like what he looked like at Tennessee. Because, I mean, I think anybody will tell you that what they've gotten from Jonas Adu to this point in the season is just a shell of what they expected based on the way he did at Tennessee. Carter Knox, 9 points, 8 rebounds last night. I thought it was one of the better games he's played.
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially in recent games as well, kind of since Carter Knox has been inserted into the starting lineup, you've really seen him grow a lot. You know, he's not settling for jumpers or anything like that. He's really driving well, I think. I think he's playing really physically on the defensive end as well and on the offensive end. He's not shying away from contact at all. Not that he was before, but I think you're seeing him kind of embrace it more, I think. And he's shooting well. I think he was 4 or 5 from the field. Let me pull up his advanced numbers here. But, I mean, he's not necessarily the best shooter, but he's shooting 78% at the rim. So when he's driving and he gets, you know, at the rim, that's when he's at his best. I think he's really starting to add a corner three game to his arsenal, I guess is the best word, which I think he hit a corner three last night. If not, he certainly hit them in the past. He hit a big one against Kentucky. But I think he's certainly grown a lot as the season has progressed. I think, you know, he's not a guy you look at and think this guy's a one and done by any means. So you look at his progression, and assuming he stays at Arkansas for another year, 2 years, I think you can be really excited about, you know, his potential and all of that. But yeah, I thought he was really productive, and yeah.
We're seeing a trend with this team where they're outplaying teams in the second half, and that was the case again last night.
Yeah, and you could see the visible frustration at the end of the first half, especially from John Calipari.
He threw his clipboard, didn't he?
He either threw something or just kind of like punched the air or something. He was really upset with how the last play turned out. I mean, they burned a timeout to get their defense set, and LSU still hit the three pointer to take the lead going into halftime, and he was obviously very upset about that, but. You saw them, I think, I mean, the second half, I mean, it was all Arkansas. LSU was never really looking like a threat in that second half. And I think that's a testament to them kind of making those adjustments and kind of taking that to heart. And I think the big thing that you notice with this game in comparison to the last game is I think Cam Carter and Jordan Sears combined for 44 points, you know, in Baton Rouge. They combined for, I think it was 15 in this game. Mm. So I think defensively you saw them, you know, kind of adjust there and really limit those guys in their looks. And also they didn't foul as much. LSU had 28 free throws in the last time those two teams played, and I think they had 6 last night. So I think you see those kind of adjustments, and you know, not just in the second half, but especially in the second half last night.
Yeah, you say Sears and Carter combined for 15. Carter had 13 of those. Sears only had, that's like the time Rodney Clark and Robert Cox combined for 53 against, or Stephen Cox.
Or there's some sort of, and I don't know if it was true, but it was some sort of like meme or screenshot. It was like Kobe Bryant and Kwame Brown combined for 66 points. Kobe Brown had 64 of them.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Yeah. Or Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant.
Not Kobe Brown. Not the former Mizzou player.
So we've got Lenardi tomorrow. What do you think he's going to say about where Arkansas stands from a tournament standpoint?
Firmly on the bubble. I think I looked at, you know, his latest bracketology, at least I think it was yesterday, the day before, as we've learned. My memory is not the greatest at this point in time. The 8 p.m. tips are getting to me. But last I saw, he had Arkansas as the first team out, which I don't think beating LSU is going to change that by any means. But if you lose to LSU, like I said earlier, it certainly would have hurt. So it kind of keeps them right there firmly on that bubble, kind of. I mean, if they continue to take care of business, especially against the teams they're supposed to beat, and some other teams continue to lose. I mean, you look at North Carolina, Pitt, those teams are losing a lot of games, and you know they're not going to have the same opportunities Arkansas has, you know, in the SEC, where most games are going to be quad one, quad two. I think every game they have right now is quad one or quad two, including at South Carolina, which I would think, well, if South Carolina continues to lose, I would imagine that might drop down to quad three.
But South Carolina is a tricky game because, I mean, they had Auburn on the ropes. They've had Florida on the ropes there, and they had Ole Miss on the ropes there last night. And I mean,
they refused to get blown out at home.
It took some. Well, what I'm saying is it took some Houdini acts by good teams to get out of South Carolina with a win.
Yeah, South Carolina is a lot like the Missouri team last year, it seems. Because, I mean, that Missouri team rarely got blown out. They were in a lot of games, and they just never won. Funnily enough, Jordan Butler was on that Missouri team last season, transferred to South Carolina, and he has yet to win an SEC game in his career.
He's a curse.
Yeah. poor Jordan Butler. He's not a bad player by any means either, so... sorry, Jordan Butler. That stinks. But yeah, if Arkansas can continue to take care of business against the teams it needs to win against, I mean, let me pull up the schedule here. Like, I don't think you're gonna get hurt too much by if you go to Texas A&M and Auburn and lose those games, because frankly, you're not expected to win those games. So, and John Calipari has long kind of maintained that, you know, a team that finishes 7-11 in SEC play and has a non-conference win over Michigan, you know, who do you think he's talking about there? Maybe it's Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But he's always kind of maintained that should be enough to get a team in, and right now that's exactly what KenPom has Arkansas as projected as. So, I mean, they'll have the opportunities if they get the wins they're supposed to get, which right now they're projected to beat Texas, South Carolina, and Mississippi State. Maybe you sneak one against, you know, maybe a Vanderbilt or a Missouri as well, or maybe, I mean, if you win one of those next two games on the road at A&M or Auburn, I mean, that would be quite the resume builder. But obviously that's a big
that's a tall task.
Yeah, but I think they're firmly on the bubble. Which when you look at, If you were to ask me in mid-January, I would have said, yeah, this team's not on the bubble at all.
Well, and the Michigan win is looking better.
Yes.
I mean, they beat Purdue the other night. The Kentucky win. They've swept Tennessee now. So those are good, solid wins that Arkansas is going to have working.
Wins, yeah.
I feel like they need one more. One more.
One more big resume win.
That could happen, and that could potentially happen this weekend at A&M.
Yeah.
I think A&M is a lot more winnable game for Arkansas than going into Auburn next week.
Oh, yeah.
one more big win, and don't lose the games that you should win. I think they've got a pretty good chance.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you take care of business in the games you're supposed to win, and maybe if you – like I said, sneak one against, you know, A&M, Auburn. You beat Missouri at home, maybe, or yeah, you win at Vanderbilt or something along those lines. Maybe that's enough to get you in, just because, I mean, the SEC has all of these different resume building opportunities, I should say, and because every game they've got left is quad one or quad two, at least as things stand. Maybe South Carolina drops to quad three if it continues to lose its games, but they're quality opportunities regardless. And if you go and you win these games, like, that's going to give you more of a resume than some of these other teams that are on the bubble, just because they just frankly don't have the same opportunities, which, you know, is it fair? Is it not fair? That's not for me to say, but yeah, I mean, Arkansas, especially if it gets one of these wins that maybe it shouldn't necessarily get on paper, I think that you're looking at a team that has a very solid case.
Anthony, good stuff. Safe travels tomorrow to, if you know where you're going, College Station.
Yes, College Station, yeah. Yeah, I'll, maybe I'll take a nap. That'll help me get my brain back in order.
You need to plug that into your Google Maps. Hey, we appreciate you being with us. Thanks to Bubba Carpenter for being here. Also, Jeff King for his interview. As we said, Joe Lunardi will join us on our podcast tomorrow. We'll also look a little bit more ahead to Arkansas, Washington State, the baseball season opener tomorrow at noon over at Baum Walker Stadium. We got some other stuff we'll discuss tomorrow as well. I'm going to go put my voice under hot tea and honey for the rest of the afternoon.
I'm going to put my brain under hot tea and honey.
Hopes that I can sound a little bit better tomorrow. We appreciate you being with us. Hope we see you at WholeHogSports.com. And if not, we'll see you tomorrow on our podcast. Have a great day, everyone.